Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back, folks, and it is now or never. I can't not say that. I mean, it just sounds like it's passé now because I've been saying it, but I was given information that it looks like Canada has switched over to digital currency. And I'm telling you, folks, the Western world is crumbling. The Western world is falling. And, you know, these bills that we saw in the States with that South Dakota blazingly violated the Constitution. These guys didn't even have a clue. It's almost like you don't have a chance. It's like, I can't believe the conservatives that voted for this. It should not have gotten even a passing vote in South Dakota. So there needs to be a lawsuit. There needs to be several lawsuits where, you know, people actually start suing their state legislatures and demanding that, you know, these bills that they're passing, which violate the Constitution. I mean, yeah, your legislators have, you know, the power. They are sovereigns over those things delegated, but they cannot violate the Constitution. They cannot compromise away your rights. So anyway, we didn't get a chance to get into property, and we did kind of dive into this this petition that's coming out of Virginia, and I'm really looking forward to diving into that very specifically. That on top of that, I just had a conversation, and this is how I found out about what happened in Canada. And as a matter of fact, Canada, they still have currency, but they are, and this is the shot across the bow, they are going cashless, and they're going to have very few exceptions for people that are, you know, still using currency, and they can't, you know, not function, because it would, you know, it would destroy vending machines and anybody that's out there. You know, they're going to try to basically, you know, do this a hard transition. In other words, you know, a typical transition is where they slowly implement something over time and allow, you know, the currency in circulation to slowly dissipate. And you know, you'd think that that's what is a type of transition, but I don't think that that's what they're going to do. And so if you were looking for gold or silver coin, you may want to check out Monex. I don't know of anybody else that does, you know, a cheaper deal for you. And as a matter of fact, let me kind of quickly look where Monex is at, because, you know, their asking price and what their what you'd have to pay, because right now it's just outrageous. A silver dollar costs way too much money. And so silver is around $20 right now. But if you look at the, you know, what you would end up paying for a silver dollar, because that's what I'm trying to look for right now, because even though the market may be fluctuating, you're still paying the top dollar. The value of the dollar, well, actually, you know what? Something's happened, because it is much closer to the actual price now. Because I could tell you, 6 months ago, when I was looking at picking up more silver, it was looking like $30 for a silver coin, just because there was a shortage of silver coins. So somehow there must have been another injection of coins. Take advantage of this. I remember telling everybody at the beginning of the pandemic, go get your silver. You could have got silver at, let me see here, what's the five-year low? Because there it is right there. It was down at about $12. Let me see. Is that the silver bullion historical cost on silver? So, yeah. So it was around March 19th, 2020, right around the beginning of the pandemic. It was about $12. Yeah, that's 2-to-1 for what you're paying for now. But anyway, there's a lot of stuff we need to cover. And there's, you know, just getting into the details, because you need to understand what property rights really mean today and what has to be done if we're going to preserve our property. If we're going to preserve it. And again, as Madison put it, if you have a right, that means you have property in those rights. They take away your rights, that means that they're literally taking away your property. They're stealing your property from you. Now, there's a few things I haven't done in a while, and I don't do this often enough, and I've forgotten the past couple of times, I think, regarding our YouTube channel. Go subscribe to the Reclaiming the Republic YouTube channel. I promise I'm going to start getting better at this. I'm going to get those Constitution courses up there, or at least the reading of the Constitution, how it's being violated and so forth. Download yourself a copy of the color-coded Constitution. It is on Reclaiming the Republic. It is on our Red State Talk Radio podcast page. And I think it's also on, I'm pretty sure it's also on our Constitutional Articles page. We got a bunch of different documents there, so I think it's there too. But anyway, I would like to say I'm getting better, but this is just a slow process. The immune system is an amazing thing, but when you don't have a full immune system, it's just like, ugh. And the thing that is killing me right now is I have not had a good night's sleep since I've had this. Actually, I got one night because I was walking dead the first couple of days I had this. I just could not sleep. And finally, I just crashed and I got up maybe 10, 12 hours later and I still felt like, oh, and the pain from, a dried out throat and everything else. I'm going, oh my gosh. But this is nothing. I mean, I hate to even sound like I'm complaining, but, I guess you get to a point where you always find something to complain about, right? I should actually count my blessings because this could have been so much worse and I could be actually in a hospital with a ventilator or something. Anyhow, that's not where we are. That's not where we're at. And so I do want to thank all of you, everybody who has offered prayers and support. And we will be, moving forward as soon as I get this fully behind us. Now, the ratification debates are coming up. We're going to be diving into these. And it's going to be kind of difficult because what I want to do is I need to do this, with Paul Venable and other people. If you want to participate in this, because it's going to take a couple of months to go through these. So if you want to participate, by all means, let me know. I mean, we will open up the mic and, have other people come in. It's because I know Paul Venable, these things happen. You all of a sudden you just can't do something for a day because you've got his family comes in or, things happen. So anyway, let me know if you're interested and you can read ahead so that we can kind of go through the topics and or the material that we're going to cover in advance so that you're familiar with it. This way you can actually talk about, your thoughts on what we're reading and your insights and so forth. So anyway, without that, one of the things I've had a little note, and I keep on forgetting to bring this up, that common law as defined under Britain is different under our Constitution. And I think that most people don't understand that. I mean, I've met quite a few people that talk about common law and they refer to the British common law. See, in America, we actually have a constitutional republic where the law is king. The constitutional law is king. And so in Britain, and under the monarchical common law is one of those things that you can challenge, you know, the king. You can challenge those things that he may be doing because they're not necessarily tied to. And, it's typically you're challenging the king's prerogative or the monarch's prerogative. And in America, if there's a problem with the Constitution, you can't use a common law court to undo something or to nullify something within the Constitution. You have to follow the constitutional process of amending the Constitution to, you know, get rid of, you know, slavery or what have you. So understanding, you know, how the common law works, it cannot challenge and, you know, change things that are embedded in our Constitution, where it can challenge the king's prerogative, and so forth, because and the whole point of common law was it is an empowerment of the people. But you can't empower the people to be able to create upheaval in the fundamental laws of the land, the supreme law of the land in America. And there are people, when you listen to them, and they go into some of the details on common law, they actually have this, I'll just say, this slant towards a monarchical common law when we don't have a monarchical government. And this, I'm finding this is the one common theme, the one common problem in investigating and looking at what all of these different patriot groups are doing. You know, if you've heard the lesser magistrate doctrine, if you've heard, you know, these, you know, the assemblies, the jural assemblies, you know, all of these things point towards and are referencing laws that were relevant and embedded in America while we were under the monarchy. And so, when I looked at the jural assemblies with Bill Hermiston or whatever his name was, I found that there were real problems because they were linking to monarchical law. We'll be right back after this promo. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me just kind of part with that. I'm helping people start to recognize that when you're looking at the footings of an argument, and they're pointing to the Magna Carta, they're pointing to some process that you needed to do under the monarchy, then it's not applicable. That law is not applied in America because under our Constitution, we don't recognize the monarchy. We recognize a republican form of government. And so things are very, very different. And I'm just amazed. How is it that people don't notice these things? When I look and talk to, you know, other Patriot groups, this just becomes a common, you know, head scratcher, because I'm listening to people, you know, and as a matter of fact, another problem I deal with, you know, really conservative groups and or other, you know, organizations is this concept of we the people. You know, we the people have the power. Well, yeah, if this was a democratic form of government, if we were a democracy, yeah, we the people would have all the power. But we don't. We have the law. We have established a law, and we have delegated very specific powers to our government, and only those powers can our government operate. And so, you know, we're doing ourselves a huge disservice by constantly regurgitating these failed paradigms, these problematic paradigms that have no place in our constitutional republic. So anyway, let me just kind of dive back into, because I want to get into the properties that we're, you know, reinforcing our property rights. And we talked about money being ultimately the liquid form of our property. I mean, you can cash out everything. And that's typically what happens with a person's estate sometimes, is it gets all cashed out, it gets all sold, and then the money that's left over gets divided up between the heirs or what have you. Now, we also talked about the right of conscience. And I, you know, emphasized this out of Madison's, you know, essay on property. When you look at, you know, and what he said, and I'll read it again. You know, this was at the very end. If there be a government, then, which prides itself in maintaining inviolable, and in other words, the sacredness, maintaining the sacredness of property, which provides that none shall be taken directly, even for public use, without indemnification to the owner. And so, we live in that kind of government. That's the kind of government we're supposed to have that actually protects it. But we've wandered so far along that we now have a government that will take your home if you can't pay your taxes. Well, hold on here. If government is supposed to protect your property, then they should never be ever, ever, ever in a position where you can't, you know, they could take your property. They should never be able to do that. Now, let's look at, you know, some of the consequences. Okay, let's say you can't pay. Let's say, you know, nobody should have to liquidate their property so that they can pay their debt to their government. If that's the case, then what does the government then do? Well, if you can't pay your taxes, then maybe the government should actually say, okay, then we are, you know, going to remove you as a U.S. citizen, and you no longer have the protections of a U.S. citizen until you're able to pay your taxes again. You know what I mean? As I understand, somebody can get into that situation, and this kind of lends towards, you know, these conversations I've had with sovereign citizens and how, you know, some of them have had to go down that path. So, okay, you need to go down that path. You can't pay your taxes. You know, something's happened, your health or what have you, and so you become an inhabitant. Well, okay, that means that you're no longer going to be eligible to receive government assistance of any kind. But that's good. Sorry about the alarm. So that's okay if you're not going to have government assistance, because government has no authority to give you assistance. And the reason they give you assistance is because they're taxing you for those things. As a matter of fact, they shouldn't even be taxing for those things. If government was doing what it was supposed to do, the tax burden would go away. But government has become something far more than it ever was authorized to be. Our government is not aligned, is not constitutional. Our government is doing all sorts of things that are outside of that constitution. And therefore, when they're doing things that they have, you know, they've never been granted those powers, you know, those powers that they're taking, they're stealing because they have no authority to do this. And what they do is they create a tax on that. So Madison, I can't emphasize enough how he really points out how the right of conscience, your right to, you know, to not take, you know, a vaccination, your right to not have to be, or you cannot be compelled to do anything by government other than defending the Constitution itself. That's the only thing that they can compel you to serve. And they can't force you to fire a gun. You can be a conscientious objector, but you have to at least assist. With, you know, and some people, when they were drafted or what have you, like Art Carney, he was never a trigger puller. He was a medic, I believe. I think he was a Navy corpsman. And so there's places and ways everybody can serve. You can be a cook or what have you. You don't have to be in the front lines, but you better be able to defend yourself if it comes down to it. It's one thing maybe, and I understand a conscientious objector, but I've ran into lots of people that use the conscientious objection more because they're just afraid. They are scared of that ultimate sacrifice. They don't want to get shot or killed. And so they just want to be out of it and not be, you know, they don't want to have to serve. In some respects, I think I've seen some people that would be willing to even surrender their citizenship because they're that scared. And I'm going, well, that is an indictment right there on the lack of conviction a person has on their liberties. And they don't either want to appreciate and or understand the importance of your liberties. Because, again, there are consequences, you know, when you become responsible for something, there's consequences for that. You have to take a stand. You have to defend. You have to protect these things, these rights that you have. Anyway, when we started talking about property, you know, now that we're focused back into the groove here of property, because we already covered previously up to the conscientious objection and your conscientious rights and the intellectual property, those types of things. And I believe, you know, because last time we talked about this a couple of days ago, I mentioned that we'll get into patents and copyrights and those types of things, because that's a different problem. And that is, you know, something that has been way blown out of proportion. I mean, rights, copyrights should not be as long as they are. And so when we start looking at state property and state property resources, right? So we look at, you know, what why would a person own property? Well, you want to have a home. You know, the fundamental need is you want to have a home. Well, if you want to buy a, you know, property with land, you know, a house with a large piece of land, well, maybe you want to be a farmer, or maybe you want to put your family there or what have you. Well, that's all fine and good if all land is equal, but all land isn't equal. And so one of the problems that the states, when states formed and as they started evolving over time from the 1800s, 1900s to the, you know, to the 21st century. Now that we're looking at land, I can tell you that some of the greatest farmland is being covered as, you know, towns and cities get developed in the lowlands. I mean, I've mentioned this before, that in the Seattle area and, you know, throughout most of the states out there, you know, you got this good fertile farmland, you know, 200 years ago, 150 years ago, and people started building their farms there. And then some people moved in and they didn't want to have a farm. So they'd buy up, you know, somebody's farm and they'd develop it and have four or five houses that were placed on that and surrendered the productivity and the capable resources to feed everybody. And we have found that because there's been a lack of strategic vision, that the states have failed to apply, that the states are actually losing more and more of their most fertile land. Now, there are some states that are just absolutely perfect for agriculture, like Iowa. But every state has a responsibility to be able to provide for them, for their own citizens. In other words, you should, if you create a state, that state should be able to function autonomously. In other words, you shouldn't have to be dependent on any food, any water. So when we're looking at a state and we say, you know, this state right here, like Nevada, where does it get its water? Well, they make their claim off the Colorado River, and that's downstream after several other states. And right now, there's this huge fight over, you know, who can take and who can siphon off most of that water. Because everybody's trying to get their water rights claimed out of that river. And I'm going, you know what? That's a problem when you've gotten into bed with, you know, creating this state of Nevada, and you're making a claim that that water will always be there for you when it's not. So what do you do? And how do you deal with the fact that you're losing water and your ability to survive? We'll be right back after this.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so states really need to reassess and reevaluate, because the whole point I'm talking here is the states need to look at what their resources are. We're now at a point where we need special minerals, we need special resources, and so forth. Now, first off, when it comes to your physical property, every inch of land that your boundary covers and the ground underneath that is yours. These mineral rights that have been stolen are stolen unconstitutionally. In other words, the government's never been delegated the authority to take away mineral rights. And so all of these claims and all of these, I'll just say, unconstitutional assertions have to be undone. Now, the federal government doesn't have the power to do that. The question is, are you going to, you know, allow your state to have those that kind of power? And I'm going to tell you that you're probably going to want to do this, because in today's era, we're looking at very hostile, very evil entities that can come in and spend a lot of money to buy up your neighbor's property or what have you, and then wage economic warfare against you and your state. We're seeing this with Bill Gates, Soros, and those kinds of people. They're buying up agricultural land. They're buying up, as a matter of fact, the Rockefellers bought up a whole bunch of land that, you know, there was the potential of gold mines and silver mines in Utah and Wyoming and so forth. And so they owned all of that land so that, you know, they would possess that. And they got the government, the government already started going down that path of starting to control mineral rights. They couldn't do that. I mean, this is all stuff that they have no authority to do. But the fact is that now that we've gotten to a point in our society where Rockefellers are very realistically real, you know, it's one thing that you can invest your money in something. But when you can all get to a point where you can play, you know, power brokers over the lives of others, then things have to change. I believe in free markets. I believe in individual freedom, but I do not believe that, you know, people should ever have the power to enslave others. I believe that people should never have the power to wage warfare. And that's exactly what Soros, Gates, and all of these elitists are doing. So let's put everything on the table and let's start having these adult conversations of how to deal with this. You know, I don't begrudge anybody. See, the fact of the matter is, you know, Joe Kennedy talked about this during the 1920s when he was rising to power, you know, financially. And he got to a point where, you know, people just said, wow, I mean, you're just so rich. And he goes, you know, you get to a point where you realize you can't spend all of the money that you've earned in your lifetime. You just can't do it. There's not that much out there for sale. And so he pointed out that after a while, it's no longer about money. You know, you're not trying to accumulate money. You're trying to accumulate power. And so we have to really look at what power is and whether a person can amass that kind of power. Now, people say in America and, you know, in a land of free, in the land of the free, you should have the ability to amass all the power you want. And I'm here to tell you, folks, no, you really shouldn't be able to do that. You should not be able to amass the kind of power where you can inflict, you know, some form of economic warfare and some kind of manipulation of others, manipulations of markets, and those types of things. You know, we need to make it so that, and I hate to make laws. I think it needs to become a strategic plan of a state to actually start laying out, you know, we don't care if you're going to own that land to farm, then all, you know, we're not going to limit you to how much land that can be. You know, if you want to buy that land up and farm. However, if you buy up that farmland and you choose not to farm it and you let it just go, you know, non-productive, then we will step in. And we will seize the access to that land and grant the ability for anybody else to use it. We need to start seeing states actually taking action in being able to provide for their own people. If all of a sudden there's a food shortage, where is the state going to get their food from? Don't even think that you can count on the federal government. The federal government has been waging warfare against the states and the people for decades. We've made that case. And as a matter of fact, I believe that constitutional minute is up on the website now. Go ahead and look at it. Read the red text. I identify all of the different types of warfare that is being waged against the states and the people. So what do you do? If you're not having these conversations, then, you know, you're running away from the real problems that will destroy us. We actually have to become adults and actually start having these conversations to say, you know, can a person amass that much property? No. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, you get to a point where you can only own so much. And there needs to be, I hate to say it, I mean, it's one thing to be able to amass the dollars, but it's another thing to be able to amass control. Because when you can control others, when you control government, then all of a sudden you are living in a paradox. You're living in a direct violation of our constitutional republic, because nobody has any more power than their own single representative. In other words, their voice shouldn't be louder with their representative than anyone else. Now, there's ways that people can actually get more and more, you know, I'll just say representation and more affluence with their representation by, you know, buying up a store or by, you know, becoming an employer and having all your employees supporting your ideas that would be beneficial for your business. We need to start actually looking at these things and start saying, you know, some of these things are very predatory. Some of these things are not necessarily good. You know, we should have been able to identify many of these things during the age of enlightenment so that as we progressed and as we moved forward, we would not have been making many of these trappings and mistakes that we have fell into. We wouldn't be having these types of globalists, you know, amassing and trying and actually getting into a position of being successful in destroying the world or controlling the world. Now, there's no way we can allow that to happen in America. There's no way any controls like that could ever happen. It's a violation of our Constitution. So how do we fix these things? Well, it has to start at your state. Your state actually has to start making some, you know, strategic assertions, and you need to actually look at a new constitution allowing the state to identify and understand that there's a general need and a general welfare design of the state and state management, that, you know, it's okay for somebody to become successful, but it's not okay for somebody to take their success and use it for an advantage over others. You know, the Constitution itself has this thing called the Uniformity Clause that protects every state. It doesn't matter if you are a desert state, you're a coastal state, or anything else. No state can have an advantage over the other states as far as the federal government is concerned. But we see the federal government constantly giving advantages to New York. The TARP bailouts, there were trillions of dollars that went to New York where all of the other states didn't get anything. And none of that was constitutional. They should never have been able to do that. And we've seen this with, you know, the railroads a long, long time ago in the early 1800s when railroads started permeating throughout America. So this is where we actually start, you know, identifying that, you know, when government starts getting involved in supporting and helping, you know, entities become successful and they start working together, that's where you actually have these terrible things that happen, like these railroad derailments, you know, in East Palestine and, you know, Detroit and so forth. Because they have the ability to create those types of problems. And when it comes to the, I'll call it the leverage of death, when it comes to being able to, you know, lay, you know, waste and kill people, nobody does that better than government. Businesses should never be in that position to be able to wage warfare. Businesses should never be able to, you know, take a, you know, a control and an advantage. The only way they can do that in a market space is when government protects them and actually does their bidding for them to give them advantages. The Sarbanes-Oxley Act gave big businesses advantages over little businesses. And this is how big businesses have gotten bigger and stronger. We have to start actually looking at all of these things that they've been doing and say, you know what? those things can't be functioning and operating in your state and in this constitutional republic. We have no room to allow this type of warfare tactics to exist and to operate against us. So when we start looking at, you know, what do we need to do? First off, we really need to look at what the fundamental needs are. Who is it that is supposed to provide for the feeding of all of the people? If all of a sudden there is literally a food shortage because there's a famine or what have you, where should the food stores come from? The food storage, the silage, should actually be held by the state. The state should actually be able to put food away so that they can take care of everybody in the state if necessary. Kind of like the Pharaoh of Egypt. We'll be right back after this promo.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
The fact that the federal government created a long, long time ago the Commodity Credit Corporation, oh, it was such a noble idea because they were going to take care of everybody. They were going to put up enough food reserves. Well, you know what? When they created the Commodity Credit Corporation, they based silage and food supplies based on the population way back during the Depression. Because, you know, they said, we don't want to have to deal with this again. And guess what? They've never increased that silage. They've never, you know, done what needed to be done. And as a matter of fact, what they should have done is they should never have done that. They should have told the states, you need to be able to, you know, have a plan and constantly work your plan. Because what will end up happening is if every state actually started, you know, establishing its own silage to where it maintained these reserves of grain and basic food for their people, then, you know, they have a 7-year silage plan or what have you, and they increase it over time because as your population goes up, you're going to need more, right? You can't plan on feeding the same, twice the amount of people with the same amount of silage. You have to increase that every time your population changes. So you have to have this all integrated into, and this is not really a sophisticated plan. It's not. You know, as your family grows, your budget grows. And so you need to be able to have more income. So you need to get educated. You need to develop your skills. You need to do things so that you can bring more money in. And the average family, they're able to do that. If you're serious in what you're doing, if you're a responsible person. Now, I know that there are people that actually have had, you know, just terrible luck and, it's, you know, things have just never worked out for them. There are outliers, but there are people that have chosen to live the life of O'Reilly. They've chosen not, I mean, the old Aesop's fable of the grasshopper and the ant, you know, and anybody, anybody that has not heard or have gone and listened to, you know, these old Aesop fables. I mean, shoot, when I was a kid, these things were on the television as these cartoons. And so they were very thought-provoking, and they taught you very, very important lessons about the importance of, you know, a good work ethic. So when the state actually is, you know, starts exercising and establishing this plan, well, yeah, it's going to take time. But what will end up happening is that if every state actually starts doing this, then there will be an increase in demand because all food is not going to be consumed each year. There'll be a certain amount of that food that'll be, you know, procured so that they have some for later. And then the next year they procure a little more so that they finally get over a 5, 6, 10 year plan, whatever, where they finally have the full amount. And based on the type of silage that you have, how long does that food stay good in that particular silage? Then what they do is they basically, when that food is about to, you know, get to a point where it's not good anymore, before it does, then the state will be able to sell that wheat, that corn, that rice off, you know, into the market space on whatever the market value is. And oh, by the way, there's a good chance, because nine times out of ten, what happens with the cost of food? It slowly goes up. And so that the state may actually make a little bit of a windfall because, you know, they're selling that food that they purchased on a seven-year dollar. You know, 7 years ago, that dollar went a little further. But anyway, the whole point is this, is that that food then gets out into the food supply as they're buying a little bit more. And it can go into, you know, the Nabisco making crackers, cereals, or what have you. But it does. What matters is that the state has a plan, that the state has a reserve of necessities to be able to provide for their people. Now, we also need to look at all, you know, all different types of things when it comes to property, you know, such as mortgages. Is mortgage usury? Banks have really gone down this path of, you know, making a huge business because who's been playing this game with the banks? It's been the Federal Reserve, an unconstitutional organization that's been able to actually, I mean, when you look at the fact that you're paying twice, three times, maybe four times the value for your home just because a bank is going to float that money for you, that's a problem. Because, yeah, the banks are getting rich off of that. Now, should government be able to create these ceilings? Should government be able to, you know, step in and create false floors or false ceilings and say you can't make more than a certain amount of money? I believe that the free market is the better way to go. But when a bank does have the ability to, you know, to make that kind of money, then, you know, I honestly think that they've become a parasite in our society. So I honestly think that there's a need for, you know, a good banking system, but I also believe that there's a need for a broad banking system, because bottom line, you know, you're always going to have those people, you know, the grasshoppers that are out there doing things that are not necessarily for their own good. In other words, they're living a riotous living. They're not taking care of themselves. And so they're going to end up, you know, having to go to these payday loan places because they don't have enough money until their paycheck comes in. So they have to borrow some money and they pay a higher price on that. And so that's what you have to do, because if you know, and you don't have to be doing these things, you have to start controlling yourself and living a disciplined life. And that, because anybody can end this type of cycle. Anybody out there that is, you know, living from paycheck to paycheck and actually having to, you know, run on, you know, more debt, that's only because you're spending more money than you probably need to be spending. And nine times out of ten, I've yet to hear a case As a matter of fact, 100% of the time, I've yet to hear a case where somebody could actually, you know, start not spending money on certain things, you know, like drinking or smoking and doing other things when, you know, you're on that tight of a budget. Do you really need to waste money on those types of things? And so, I mean, you watch Divorce Court, you watch Ramsey, you watch these different types of shows, and you realize that, you know, people are doing this to themselves and that they're creating these markets. If we were became a disciplined society, we would not have these types of parasites, you know, shark loans or what have you, payday loans. They just wouldn't exist. These charlatans would, you know, they'd actually have to work for a job too instead of taking advantage. Bail bondsmen, that's another travesty. And anyway, but the whole point of what I'm trying to talk about right now is that your states need to start looking at what strategically they need to do. And one of the things that they need to do is they need to declare, you know, looking at their land, they can tell. I mean, they know every square inch of their state, and they know where the more fertile agricultural belt is, and they need to, you know, zone that area to say you can't put cities there, you can't put developments there. You have to, you know, leave this as open air because we need agricultural production for, you know, to make, you know, X amount of food so that we can buy some of that up. And, you know, the state should pay, you know, better, or there should be an advantage for a farmer in selling, you know, their food products, their rice, their wheat, or what have you, to the state so that, you know, there's this in-state advantage over other states. And this is how, you know, the states can actually, you know, have, I'll just call it, create a symbiotic relationship with their own citizens. It's a mutually benefiting relationship. And by doing so, you know, then if problems befall, if you actually, you know, downturn in the economy or what have you, your state will actually function just fine. It won't even be a blip. And you don't have to be a pharaoh and you don't have to be a king to start looking at these things. And it's the same thing. So the state needs to strategically look at its mineral deposits, its energy deposits, and those types of things and say, what can we do? One of the things that need to happen over time is as the states start taking their roles and responsibilities seriously, then I believe that they will start maturing to a point where they will be looking at the ability to start creating compacts amongst themselves to create mutually benefiting relationships. And when I say mutually, I mean, really, they're exclusive mutual benefiting relationships. And I'll give you a good example, water, because we talk about this. There's no reason why states on the western coast, you know, like Nevada and so forth, cannot, you know, create a compact where there's all the rainfall water from the Pacific Northwest can be piped down there and creating those types of compacts. But we have to get into that in our next show. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.